one, I guess, just maybe redundant of previous discussions we had. But there was a question here that this person wants to put up a beverage, and he wants to use, by the way, I explained it here, galvanized wire for the long run. Says between supports. Can he use galvanized wire?
If you've got a good balancing structure or a twin lead that's feeding it, you feed it in a thoroughly balanced manner. Simplest thing center in the world. That's the good news. What's the hidden information that most of us don't know about until they work with it for a whole line and start asking a bunch of questions, you find out that a dipole is a standing wave structure. Fancy words, that beautiful signal you launch onto the dipole at your favorite frequency where the dipole is tuned. The dipole has a Q of something like 20 or 30. Anyhow, the signal bounces back and forth on the dipole something like 30 times before it finally radiates to space. That's why the dipole starts becoming reactive so fast. When you go a little bit higher or a little bit low of the frequency you've resonated it to, all of those bounces start falling out of phase, and then where you get leading current or lagging current, because they're out of phase, and that's a fancy way of saying it looks inductive or it looks capacitive. If you make a dipole out of galvanized wire, you're going to lose a little bit. The signal only goes down there once. And so if you made yourself a good beverage of the right length with the right terminating resistor at the far end, and by the way, that terminating resistor, the only reason you put that there is to give it a good front lobe and your back lobe would start coming close to the same strength. But the main thing about that beverage is the signal travels down there once. It doesn't have to bounce a whole lot of times. It doesn't accumulate all the losses of all the resistances of all the bounces. Therefore, of any antenna in the world that can tolerate high resistance wire, it's a beverage. My gut feel is you could use the lousiest, most corroded, galvanized steel wire with rust on the wire, and you make yourself a beverage antenna with a beautiful shiny copper or silver plated wire, and then you replace it with your yucky looking galvanized rusted wire, and you start measuring signal strength with those two antennas side by side, I defy you to see a significant difference. So because it's a traveling wave structure, the real performance comes from length and not necessarily the resistivity of the wire. Another thing that happens is that RF is pretty smart. Sometimes we build our dipole antenna with a rubber insulation on the 16-gauge household wire, and you think that, gee, you've got an insulator on the outside instead of bare copper, and the signal is not going to be happy going down. Well, the signal digs down through the rubber insulation until it finds the real copper, and it does its thing. So if you try to measure the difference of a dipole made out of 14-gauge household wire with or without the rubber insulation, except that 432, and you're using it for a high-tuned quaggy antenna where you've got the square loop-driven element, and you get a little bit of difference in capacitance, a little bit of difference in tuning with the rubber, except for that case, nothing happens. The RF just goes down through the rubber and waits until it hits a nice, solid conductor and does its thing. So in the case of a beverage antenna with rust on the surface, I predict the RF would go down through the rust, wait till it finds the real conductor underneath, even if it's steel, and you're going to get 95% of the performance. I'd like somebody to go out there and confirm it, but that's my gut feel. Go for it. Galvanized steel wire may be the best stuff in the world for beverage antenna, because the average guy putting up a beverage, maybe he wants to have it at a particular altitude off the ground. Maybe he's going to make it a quarter of a mile long. He's going to be stringing it through the trees and the bushes and everything else and galvanize it through a great wire that has the strength to do it. That's my feeling on that one, Mel. K2KEY. K2IWM. Give us the next one.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Yeah, well, this is why I can only equate it by, you know, the experiences that I had. So I gave him the answer, basically. I said, I don't know, again, you know, how it would behave on a beverage antenna. I know there isn't a heck of a lot of reference to the loss resistance of copper wire as a, well, you want to build the beverages for 8 feet or so. The actual distance of copper wire and 3 megahertz. Another thing, it's not very, very well defined in too many books, I believe. So, but I believe that the loss resistance is considered extremely negligible for copper wire, I know, and the dipole situation, as you say. If you have, I know, you know, if you have like a dipole with about 60, say 64 ohms, low resistance and resonance, you only have a few percent of loss resistance at that point. But if you go to, I guess, a beverage antenna, I can say the long length of the beverage and everything may be better than using copper. Now come to think of it, maybe I can say besides the strength, it may be just better to use iron wire rather than copper wire for a beverage antenna, Dick, over.
I think I see where you're going here. If you want good front-to-back ratio, you are putting something like a 600-ohm resistor on the far end of the beverage antenna, on the nose of the antenna. So you're absorbing the signal that's left over, not allowing it to bounce back, because if it does bounce back, you start getting back lobe response as opposed to just forward lobe response. Properly terminate a beverage antenna. Not only do you get a whole lot of dB of gain in the desired direction, directions is really a direction slightly left of center of the wire and slightly right of center of the wire, but you get some nice gain out of a beverage antenna, and you want to dissipate the signal that gets to the far end, and that's why you put the terminating resistor. So would you get almost the same performance if you distribute the resistor along the wire as opposed to having a lumped resistor at the end? I can see some pros and cons to each approach. So, if any antenna is tolerant of high-resistance steel rusty wire, it's got to be a beverage. So I think he's got to go on that one, Mel. Back to you.
That's exactly basically what I basically gave him as an answer. I said I was thinking that if we can assume that the loss resistance must be somewhere behind that of the copper, that you most likely will not have to terminate the beverage with a resistor. I mean, that's what I'm just, you know, picturing because of, I heard many years ago that during the 30s and all, when, you know, things in copper wire was costing pennies, it was still hard for a lot of amateurs to be able to purchase it. And so through the situation that they were able to get a lot of free iron wire many times used for fencing, you know, barbed wire and all that kind of free stuff they were able to find, that they all of a sudden found that it had a hidden treasure there that was better than copper for many times because of the resistance that, like you say, instead of a lump resistance, you had more distributed resistance take over.
And the more I think about it, there's something else going on here too, Mel. My gut feel is that a beverage will give you a little bit more performance if you raise it above the ground as opposed to having it very close to the ground. The good news is this antenna close to the ground still gives you a lot of performance. However, although the ground is almost a mirror at RF frequencies, it still has some ground resistance. So therefore, even if I made the wire of the beverage antenna out of silver-plated copper wire, the lowest resistance I can get my hands on, still there is a slight distributed resistance along the wire, obvious by the fact that some of that signal is coupling between wire and earth. And although in that environment, with that kind of a signal, the traveling wave signal, it's not using a whole lot of ground current, still there are ground currents that are giving you a small amount of dissipation. So the bottom line of all this is that the ground dissipation along the wire because of the earth underneath the wire, I think, is the dominant resistance in the system other than the 600 ohm resistor at the far end. So again, I think the the resistivity of the wire you use almost doesn't matter. Yeah, you speculated that a distributed resistor along the wire is such that you wouldn't need the terminating resistor at the far end. Depending on how persnickety you are about front-to-back ratio, I would still put the resistor at the far end. And a smart person would also tune the resistor at the far end for best possible front-to-back ratio. The next guy would go one step further than that. He'll launch some voltage on the wire of the beverage antenna, which is picked up by an RF choke and a relay at the far end, so that he can make the terminating resistor go in and out of the circuit. In other words, open up the 600 ohms terminating resistor when he desires to have a little bit of a backlobe response. And it's probably a way of switching in with different voltages and AC and DC and whatever, plus and minus voltages that you launch on the wire, and your RF choke and relay network at the far end picks it up. Therefore, you either have a open or a 600 ohm resistor, or you throw in the capacitor, or you throw in the inductor. I think you can do some tuning of the antenna to give you some electronic steering by doing things like that. So as simple as a beverage looks on paper, I think you can have a lot of fun making variations with it. Back to you, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
This is K2KEY. Yeah, I can say you'd have to really, I never experimented. I'm going to tell you the truth. I never experimented, you know, with beverage. I never had the facility to put a beverage in place. So I don't know exactly, you know, how it would behave if you substituted copper wire for copper wire, iron wire. And again, this is, like Dick just said, you'll have to do some experimenting, whether it, you will need the terminating resistor or you know, run it without it. It depends on the resistance of the iron wire in place of that. I don't know, because like I say, we're dealing with two different factors here over a long line, what will happen with loss resistance. All right, anyhow, I think we sort of, but again, the bottom line is you should be able to definitely make a beverage with the iron wire. That's basically getting back to the original question. Can you use iron wire for a beverage? And I believe the answer will be yes. Then there was I got an email. I'm a prospective ham, and last week it mentioned something very interesting about wave angles. One of your statements was wave angles, takeoff angles, and vertical angle of radiation are all the same. If I'm going to put up an antenna, which of the antennas will present the least dangerous, or the least danger to myself and my neighbors? I guess I used the word vertical angle of radiation. I think that's what that's what I think has caused this kind of question. Again, I think we covered this pretty much, that again, with this business with radiation, Dick, over.
Okay, beautiful subject for the second one. Let me go back to the first one. The beverage antenna, and you said you don't have the real estate to do it. Well, to a small degree you do, Mel. By way of Google Earth, I have zoomed in on Dover Street in Brooklyn, 11236 area, 11235, and I've seen your QTH. If you use a fine enough piece of wire and shoot it over the housetop with a slingshot, you could put up a beverage antenna. You'd have to do it at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I think it would be a north-south antenna. But because you don't want to go across the street, but going across the housetops in Dover Street, I think you could set up a beverage film. Barry, from time to time, has talked about doing this, setting up antennas that, in a minor way, use the adjacent pieces of property. Barry has a very friendly neighbor to the south of him that allow him to do anything. He's got an empty lot to the north of him where he can go to hell and gone. He can commit murder there. Nobody knows the difference, and so on. So resource there to put up a beverage antenna, in my opinion. That would be the first one on Dover Street. Mel, give us some thought. And maybe you don't want to comment, I understand. When it comes to radio frequency biohazard, I'm writing lots of memos right now to the community of Bayville, among other communities. You saw that Newsday article on, the January 4th issue, anyhow. The Department of Homeland Security wants to drastically increase the amount of communication hardware that's being used by fire, police, ambulance, and other kinds of first responders. And many of these communities are thoroughly, thoroughly misunderstanding the subject of RF radiation. Boy, we radio people back in 1900, 1910 made a huge error to call it RF radiation. Up until World War II, that was a perfectly good word. You look it up in the dictionary, the word radiation means to send out particles or signal in all directions. Well, a radio signal does go out from the antenna in essentially all directions. So yes, it radiates. But the difference between the radiation, which should be called transmission, radio transmission is what we're doing. The difference between radio transmission and nuclear material breakdown, nuclear radiation, is night and day. When a nuclear particle disintegrates because it's radioactive material, like uranium and polonium and plutonium and cesium, all these fancy materials, when they break down, a small microscopic or submicroscopic real particle comes flying out of there, zillions of them at the speed of light, and when they penetrate your skin, they do damage. They can kill cells, they can disturb your DNA, they can, in some cases, generate cancer. Nuclear radiation can do that. RF energy doesn't have, by a million to one, it doesn't have anywhere near the energy to do that. It is a wave, it is not a particle. RF transmission, radio transmission, is a wave. And unless you do something really dumb, like defeating the safety switch and putting your head in a microwave oven, which runs close to 1,000 watts, and turning it on and sitting there for 6 minutes, you do that, you're going to create damage. And the first damage you'll create is maybe to your eyes. But other than doing something dumb like that, our normal antennas and normal power levels of 1,500 watts and less that we run on ham radio are safe as all hell. Yes, if you operated your kilowatt radio station from the attic of your house, and if you used a no transmission line, you run the 135-foot-long dipole by taking 67 feet of wire out the north window and 67 feet of wire out the south window, and you're in the center with the transmitter running 1,500 watts, and you press a key down, and you put a brick on the key, and now you lay your head against the wire of the dipole itself. Yes, you do that, you'll get yourself in trouble. But you can see you've got to make two or three mistakes in a row. If you're more than 5 feet away from the wire that's doing the radiating on 80, 40, 20, 15 meters, if you're more than 5 feet away from that wire, you're safe. So your neighbor, which is 150 feet away, is so far away from the signal being emitted, the wave that's coming off that wire, that to discuss whether or not the wave comes up at some angle that misses their house or goes straight through the house, we're speaking about academic things here. We're talking about energy that the neighbor is going to get amount of wave, which when it's by their body and very little of the HF energy is absorbed. Most of it goes through and doesn't get absorbed. But if a little bit of energy that gets absorbed, we're talking about something that's 50,000 times weaker than the amount of heat energy they'll get when they lie on the beach blanket in the summertime. You lie on the blanket in the summertime at the beach, and the sun is beating down on you, and it's exposing you to potentially 1,000 watts per square meter. And your body is roughly 1 square meter if you're an adult. So the amount of heat energy you get from the sun is thousands of times beyond what you could possibly get with any reasonable use of ham radio equipment. Yes, to be on the super safe side, ARL, the FCC, does have some special questions you're supposed to answer. on the question pool these days concerning RF radiation, radio frequency biohazard. Just to be on the super safe side so people understand that if they do some really dumb things, they could possibly get themselves in trouble. For that reason, there are questions on that subject, but it's being super conservative to put them there at all. So, to discuss whether or not you're getting energy out of your antenna into your neighbors or into you, let me backtrack. One of the sentences I said to these communities that are fighting this Department of Homeland Security requirement to put increased communication equipment on their water towers near the schools and whatever, one of the things I said is that if you stand at some reasonable distance, like 5 feet, from a police transmitter that happens to be on your water tower, and the police transmitter might run as much as 100 watts, the amount of RF transmission of waves that comes out of that antenna that impinges on your body and creates heat is approximately the same as if you stood the same distance in front of a 100-watt light bulb without a reflector on it. So a 100-watt VHF police transmitter and a 100-watt light bulb is very, very similar in the amount of heating it creates. I'll admit the heating is displayed a little bit differently. The RF energy hits your body and goes down a centimeter into your skin before it gets absorbed. Whereas the light energy out of the light bulb, most of it's absorbed right at the skin line and doesn't go very far in. There's a slight difference there. But other than that, the amount of heat energy is about the same. Well, you tell the people in each of these towns that are fighting the Department of Homeland Security that to operate a few feet away from the police transmitter is safe, and they think you're crazy. Well, if they think their children are in danger because of that, are we going to, and by the way, the school is 200 feet away in the case that's being fought most fervently these days, are we going to tell our children that for reasons of their safety, they cannot be any closer than 200 feet from a 100-watt light bulb? Are we also going to keep them out of the sun? Because the sun gives them an amount of energy that is 1,000 times stronger. So if you're really worried about the heat energy that you get from a radio wave, and if you think it's significant that you're going to keep your children out of the sun and you're not going to expose them to light bulbs and so on, it's crazy. It's a strong misunderstanding of the physics involved. It's xenophobia, pure, uninformed xenophobia. The danger that's created by not installing the antennas and the people who will die because of that is a hell of a lot more significant than what you think is the misinformed danger of being in front of a radio transmitter because it's sending out a wave. That's my piece. As you can tell, I'm a little hotter than the collar on this one because this has been going on for months and months because of the misunderstanding of all of those people and all of those towns. This problem is not going to go away for years. We radio people are informed about the lack of danger of any reasonable use of radio communication equipment. By far the most dangerous thing that every single American can possibly do, and it's not dangerous, but the most dangerous thing they can do in this area is to operate a cell phone. You stand alongside of a television or radio broadcast transmitter, or you stand alongside of a cell phone base station transmitting tower, you're looking at a massive piece of equipment. Good old common sense says, wow, that thing is dangerous. You take that tiny little cell phone or a Motorola Razr and you slap it against the side of your head. It runs milliwatts of power and you feel safe as all hell. You've got it backwards. Because the cell phone antenna is a fraction of an inch away from your head, even though it's running milliwatts, and I believe they're safe, but still, the total amount of radio energy coming out of that cell phone, entering your head, is exactly 1 million times greater than if your house was directly next door to the cell phone base station because of inverse square law. You can't get any closer than 200 feet to the antenna on that cell phone base station because it's 100 feet in the air and your house is not on that property. You're on the adjacent piece of property. You can't get any closer. Because of the distance of 200 feet versus 1 inch, once you understand the physics of inverse square law, which means every time you double the distance between you and the source of energy, you get one quarter of the energy. Every time you double the distance, you get one quarter. You square the difference in distance, and that's the difference in energy that you get. A light bulb behaves that way. A radio wave behaves that way. Almost everything obeys that way. So because the cell phone, even though it's running a minuscule amount of power, because it's a fraction of an inch away from your head, it's giving you a lot of heating energy. Now, that's not necessarily dangerous. The only experiment they have really confirmed so far as to what does a cell phone do to a human being, I've been using them now for like 20 years. What does it do? When you do a very careful experiment, you can find out by a double-blind test, by having a whole bunch of volunteers use cell phones. Some of them are operating, and some of them are not operating, and you don't know which is which. That's a double-blind test. It's also double-blind because the person evaluating the data doesn't know which ones are active. You do the test, and you sum all the data, and you find out the people who are using the active cell phone, when they're doing mental mathematics, do the mental mathematics a little bit faster. The heating effect that you get from a cell phone, it's a fraction of a degree Fahrenheit. It's a very small amount of heating. But the heating that you get makes your brain work a little bit faster. Is that dangerous? Is that bad? I don't know. I doubt it. RF energy, even though it's called radio frequency radiation, as I said, we got to get rid of that darn word. It's radio frequency energy. It's radio frequency transmission. Really dumb, like I described before, putting your head in a microwave oven. It's hard to do something that's going to give you any danger. That your cell phone is so great, the danger from them is so darn small that it's an extremely good trade-off. You're 1,000 to 1 more unsafe when you climb into an automobile. 40,000 people per year die in the United States in automobile accidents. That's a big number. 40,000 people. That's almost the amount of number of people we lost in the Vietnam War. We kill that many almost every year in automobiles. If we really worried about statistics, we'd be giving up driving. Of course that's crazy. A much safer thing to do is design safe automobiles and safe highways. And use better airbags, better seat belts, and so on, and stronger frames in cars. Don't drive two-wheel vehicles on public roads, because they are very risky. So, risk has to be put in context. Everything we do has risk. There's a risk-benefit ratio to everything you do. If you want absolutely no risk, you would never get out of bed in the morning. But there's a risk if you do that, too. Without the lack of exercise, there's other kinds of diseases that will strike you. A smart person evaluates the risks. He does what he can that's reasonable to eliminate the rate, to limit the risk, to decrease the risk, and then he goes on with the activity, and he lives his life. You're not going to get out of this life alive. Enjoy the process. You can tell you got me on a hot subject that I've got some emotion about here, Mel. K2KGY, K2RAW in the tech net.
Thanks, I have a comment.
Okay, Eugene, we're going to get to you right after Mel. Mel?
Okay, this is K2KGY, yeah, well, the question is that basically came, both of them came from somewhere out in your area, out in an area called Center Reach. So I would assume that somewhere out in your neck of the woods, as they say, Nick. And the question was that because I had made a statement, and I guess the statement most likely maybe been somewhat contradictive from what you had mentioned to a study that you were doing and how you presented it, because they quoted me and said that I said that every antenna radiation pattern had lobes, and they vary in number, size, and shape, and magnitude, which I did say, basically. But when I said the word antenna radiation, I guess I should have left out radiation. I should have said every antenna has patterns, has lobes, and they vary in number, size, and radiation. Radiation is the way we radiation pattern. Maybe that's the way I should have reworded it that way, and not thought it out with the antenna radiation pattern thing. So, possibility I thought of some of the problems and controversies out there in Central Reach, Long Island, Dick, and then pick up, I believe, Eugene wants to make a comment over.
No, you used the right word. A good technical name is the radiated pattern of an antenna. Now maybe we should call it the wave pattern, the antenna pattern, because the word radiation is an emotional word, and so we got to be careful with it. But we radio people, we ham radio operators and electronic enthusiasts, work day to day with radio energy. We know it to be safe. I mean, hasn't driven any of us crazy, right? Right? You know what I'm saying here? Below 30 megacycles, the majority of the energy passes through your body and doesn't get absorbed. Between 30 and 300, an awful lot of the radio energy that hits you gets absorbed and simply turned into heat. And the defining document is the ANSI report. AMSI stands for American National Standards Institute. And the American National Standards Institute has something called the IEEE C95 report. Unfortunately, it's not written in English. By that I mean it's written in high technical radio language. Most people don't understand it. When you start doing a web search, the good news is that the World Wide Web, the Internet, can give you a lot of information free of charge. That's the good news. The bad news, a certain percent of the information is not very good information.